Hello?
There you go. Hello. Not used to that yet. I'd like to welcome you to the regular meeting of the Board of Education for Tuesday, October 10th, 2017. Mrs. Ratcher, will you take the roll, please?
Mrs. Fairgreath.
Here.
Mr. Gaffney.
Here.
Mrs. Linkemer.
Here.
Mr. Mannheim.
Here.
Mr. McNally.
Here.
Ms. Weibel.
Here.
Mrs. Yule.
Here. I would like to ask you all to rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So thank you all for coming out on such a bad night, probably going to get worse. Before we begin the meeting, the board would like to take a moment to recognize the untimely passing of a student in our school district last week. So if you'd all join me in a brief moment to remember that student. Thank you. And the board would also really like to recognize and express our deepest gratitude to all the staff throughout the district who came to help at the schools that were affected. We very much appreciate Dr. Jason Pearson's efforts, letting us know and being there in a very tough time for our students and our staff. And I also would like to really express our deepest appreciation to Mr. Morrill, who was a rock and very admirable in his efforts to get through something that was very difficult, and also in his ability to marshal his staff and make sure that they could do a good job also, even though they were dealing with grief also. So that's what I would like to express on behalf of this school board. Next on the agenda are citizen comments. And here they are. Okay.
Mrs. Hill, would you like me to read this first?
Yes, please.
The school code provides for a public comment period at each school board meeting subject to reasonable constraints. The practice of this board is to limit public comment to 3 minutes per speaker to a total of 30 minutes per meeting. Speakers addressing the board are expected to maintain a reasonable level of civility. Additionally, all personnel matters are sensitive and confidential. Comments regarding individuals should be respectful.
Excuse me.
Insults and defamatory remarks have no place in this setting. The board will terminate public comment if speakers cannot adhere to these guidelines. Please identify yourself at the beginning of your remarks.
Mm-hmm. We have our citizen comments here already at the table. We have six citizen comments today. Two of the speakers have spoken to us before recently on this very topic, and our policy is to put that at the bottom of the list or consider it later. So I will go to this list in the order of those who haven't spoken to the board members before. So the first to speak would be Emily Smith. I hope I didn't surprise you too much, but you were probably thinking you could sit there for. So welcome to the board table.
Thank you. On. Can everybody hear me?
Mm-hmm.
Hi, my name is Emily Smith. I'm here to address the large class sizes in Camp and Sin policy, specifically the large class sizes in second grade at Belgram Elementary. I have a son and a daughter that attend separate second grade classrooms at Belgram. These classrooms are impacted by the current Camp and Sin policy and have 29 kids in one and 30 kids in the other. The micro-level reality is that our children are living day-to-day in overcrowded classrooms that are not providing the least restrictive and safest environment possible for our children to learn and succeed. Based on studies, the recommended classroom guidelines, which is 18 students, 18, are there for a reason. We have too many kids, teachers, assistants, aides, etc., coming in and out of the classrooms. There's too much noise, inconsistency, and not enough space. The teachers' union contract has recommended guidelines of 24 for K through 2 and 27 for 3 through 5. We are leaving no wiggle room for new families moving in to go to their neighborhood school, for kids who are needing one-on-one attention or waiting for learning or other disability diagnosis. I, as well as many other parents, are frustrated by the enrollment numbers for the elementary schools in D303. One can see how the average of 24 looks great on paper, but when you break it down and see 16 in second grade at Lincoln and 29 at Belgram, it is maddeningly unfair. Not to mention the grades that have a lower overall total number of students but get split into three sections instead of two. As a result of the district's actions, I feel Belgram second grade will receive more disruptive behavior, higher absentee rates, lower assessment scores, and lower park scores. The cap and sim policy is not a solution for the unwillingness to allocate funds to hiring new teachers. You must prioritize elementary school students. The future of D303 and the measurement of D303 success or failure depends on it. At best, you're setting these kids up to underachieve, and at worst, many of them may fail. At such a critical time of development, both mentally and physically, we cannot risk to lose these students. I wanted to share some impacts that I've experienced at home with my own children. My son expresses boredom and disinterest in math due to not being challenged. My son and daughter express daily frustration that the classes are consistently being reprimanded for too much noise, talk, and disruption in the class. What would one expect when there are 29, 30 kids in one classroom? In conclusion, I would like to share a personal note. Both of my parents were teachers, my mother an elementary teacher for 30 years and my father a high school teacher for 30 years. Therefore, I've always been an advocate for public school education, always. When I tell them how many kids are in my children's classrooms, they are simply appalled. There is no other way to describe it. In truth, I am embarrassed to talk about it with them. I am embarrassed how I live in a district that boasts how great the schools are, but we have a pervasive and continued issue with overcrowded classrooms. I have a very few specific asks I'd like to make of the board and administration. One, add a third classroom to the current second grade Belgram. Two, add a third grade classroom for next year's third grade at Belgram. Three, reduce the cap and send to 25 or less. Four, eliminate or drastically reevaluate the school choice policy, specifically reevaluate it yearly instead of grandfathering and allow it in only extreme circumstances. And five, make this a regular agenda item so the public can be aware of your efforts, plans, as it affects will impact the entire community from both a financial and schooling perspective. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. The next speaker, and I apologize, I just can't read it, Eric Busletta? Yeah. And could you give us that your name?
Busletta, B-U-S-L-E-T-A.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, my name is Eric Busletta. I have two students at Belgram Elementary. One is a third grader, one is a second grader. I echo Emily's statements earlier, but for you, I wanted to shed at least specific light to one student, which is my daughter. We've been fortunate that my daughter has grasped the foundational skills of a good student early, to the point that we were told that she was, by previous teachers, that she could thrive with more challenge. She excelled in first grade, with over half of her report card graded as exceeding. We were proud, right? Excited. In this, unfortunate, but the decision to let her move forward earlier than expected was so that she would be challenged. And we thought that this district would provide her the support if it was ever needed. Unfortunately, our opinion has changed due to the class size and the need to support students that may not be grasping subjects, may put her at a disadvantage, may not give her that extra effort and support that she needs. I now look back at the decision to let her move forward and question if it was the right one in District 303. Candidly, I'm disappointed that this is occurring in District 303. I'm a little perplexed that the board wasn't ahead of the current situation within the second grade classes at Belgram, along with your other schools that find themselves overrun with students in certain classes today. This could tell me that the board was, one, surprised that the parents had found this to be unacceptable, or figured that the cap and spend policy would be an adequate answer. 29 to 31 students in any classroom is way too many. Emily put it perfectly. In a district full of resources, we are lacking the primary resource they need, a dedicated teacher who could commit their resources to the correct amount of students to ensure their success. We hope that the message is heard. It's serious. We can take it into consideration of moving them out of the district because it's disappointing because she may not be able to find the success that she needs in the future. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next speaker is Joe Turoff. Hi, welcome.
Thank you. Good evening. I just want to start by saying thank you very much for listening to us. I think this is important. And I also want to start by saying that this is not a criticism of the school or the teacher. I think that it's a difficult situation, I think, for everyone. But I did come here for the first time ever to try and just talk about a concern that I have. So my family moved from Geneva to St. Charles this year. And one of the key factors in our decision was the ability for our 8-year-old son to attend Belgram Elementary. Our son has a special condition. He's a type 1 diabetic, a disease that chose him, not the other way around. So it requires constant monitoring. If his blood sugar gets too low, he loses consciousness. While he's responsible and very self-aware, he's just 8 years old, and he's a boy, and therefore requires constant adult monitoring during the school day. And it's critically important that the teachers not only be aware, but they also not be overwhelmed during the day so they can truly understand what's going on with his body, because sometimes you're just not aware. You might have just had too much fun at recess and things just kind of changed. I will tell you, it was really unfortunate to learn the size of his class. I never expected that the size would be this large. And quite frankly, my wife and I are afraid. All right, we're afraid that one day, you know, it just would be a lot of things going on in the class, and as a result, my son will go low and pass out in the middle of class. It's something that we are always thinking about. I think that the teacher has really tried her best, and the nurse has done a phenomenal job, and we appreciate it. But at the same time, you know, this is so, I can't believe that one teacher would have to follow and really be aware of all of these children in their class. So my concern does go a little bit further. We had an incident a few weeks ago when a substitute teacher sat in for his teacher. She didn't keep with the schedule, which impacted his ability to have a snack. You know, type 1 diabetes is like tennis. When your blood sugar goes high, you got to hit it low. When it goes low, you got to hit it high. It's just sugar and insulin, and it's back and forth 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And fortunately, another 8-year-old boy in the class recognized that he was starting to go low. And he then went to the teacher because my son couldn't, and he was able to get corrected. He was diving low. And this is the kind of thing that really kind of makes us afraid. So our medical concern aside, my son does come home like the other two all the time, just saying that he wasn't challenged. He was always talking about how there's a few kids in the class that are poorly behaved. They miss their recess. And as a result, the class is just rowdy, and it's very, very difficult for him to learn. In our 13 years in the Tri-City, I've never had anything but positive experiences with the school systems. I've never felt the need to attend or voice my opinion at one of these meetings. Geneva and Heartland Elementary have done an excellent job with both of our children. Fortunately, I think the decision of inaction is having a great impact on my son's education and our class's education, and I also fear for his safety. So I ask that you take immediate action and add a teacher, a third teacher, to the second grade at Belgram, and at worst case scenario, you add a teacher's assistant to the classes that are high. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The next speaker is Colleen Cozy. Welcome.
Hello. Excuse me. My name is Colleen Cozy, and I am here to address the board with my concerns regarding the large class sizes in the district, specifically at third grade at Wasco. It's unfortunate, but there's a discrepancy in the equity of class sizes throughout the district. There are some classrooms that have 19, 20, 21 students, while Wasco is stuffing 29 children with a variety of abilities into one classroom. Students in these overcrowded classrooms are unfairly subject to disadvantages such as decreased individualized instruction from their teacher. Education is changing. Students are not expected to sit in rows and just take in information from their teacher. We want our kids to have the ability to problem solve, think critically, collaborate with one another, communicate effectively, and this is best accomplished in smaller groups. The reading and writing workshop model used at Wasco is a fantastic literacy model. However, a critical component to that teaching approach to being effective is the teacher individually conferencing with students and providing feedback on the students' reading and writing. The quality and the quantity of one-on-one student and teacher interaction is significantly less in overcrowded classrooms. I appreciate the inquiry focus in the curriculum at the school, but again, an essential component of inquiry is the teacher's role supporting, assessing, and responding to multiple students' investigations. Students in overcrowded classrooms are not allowed the same opportunities as their counterparts in schools that are reaping the benefits of more suitable class sizes. Another factor that it plays an important role in my son's academic success is the relationship between him and his teachers. When classes are overcrowded, it limits the ability of the teacher to make a positive connection with their students. Students in smaller classes have the opportunity to receive more personal attention from their teachers, and that translates into deeper, more authentic learning. It is difficult for me as a parent to sit back quietly while I know that my son can be in an educational disadvantage because of the district's decision to use its resources elsewhere. I was at the last board meeting and I listened to the budget presentation, and I imagine that a lot of thought, deliberation, and research went into that presentation. I question what data and deliberation went into the decision that putting 29 students in a third grade classroom is an effective practice and in the best interest of the students and the teachers. Money needs to be spent on hiring dedicated teachers. Hiring teacher's aid is just putting a band-aid and not a solution to the issue. Another student needs to be added to next year's fourth grade class at Wasco, and quite frankly, other sections should be added to any grades that are over the recommended limit in the teacher's contract. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Now we'll return to the previous speaker, or the earlier speakers, and that would be Michelle Thompson, speaking on Wasco's third grade.
My name is Michelle Thompson. I'm here to talk about adding a third section to Wasco fourth grade next year. There's a great deal of distrust between parents and principals. The distrust comes from the administration mandating the cap and send practice to encourage principals to keep operating budgets low and to avoid hiring new teachers. This year, 9 elementary school principals were given the mandate to enforce cap and send at their schools. The administration is encouraging our principal to put Wasco's operating budget first at the expense of the educational needs of Wasco third grade students. The administration is to blame for this lack of trust. Today's Wasco third grade classroom and educational issues are the result of the financial pressure placed on this grade by this administration. When making these decisions, no prior consideration was taken for educational needs, square footage of classroom, and behavioral diversity of these students. 3 teachers retired from Wasco last year, the total combined salary of approximately $325,000. In response to our questions, a teacher would cost about $60,000. Those salaries were taken back into the education pot. Rarely does Wasco see salary money come back in the form of a teacher. Wherever the money is going, parents feel something else is being paid for in the backs of our kids' education. Is this the reward? Our principal gets 2 thumbs up from Dr. Chapman. We thank our principals for doing more with less. These are Dr. Chapman's exact words when speaking about how fiscally responsible all 12 principals have been this past year. I have never met any student who has learned more given less instruction time and less time with the teacher. It's clear, Wasco third grade students only have their parents looking out for them. Change needs to happen. It starts with stopping the cap and send practice. Find a way to go back to 3-4 section grades. The educational futures of our Wasco students, your future middle and high school students, are being stifled by cap and send. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. The next speaker is Zach Luchenko. Welcome.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Zach Luchenko, and my daughter attends second grade at Bell Graham, one of the many max-out classrooms impacted by the current cap and send policy here in the district. At the last board meeting, I shared the general and high-level concerns I have with the current policies that have created the overcrowded situation for my daughter's classroom. I also pointed out the difference between the macro-level view that the board and administration has to take compared to the micro-level reality that our children and the educators live with every day. Today, I'm here to share some specific examples on the micro-level reality and how it's impacting classes, families, and the community and individual students as well. First of all, I wanted to share the challenges the situation has created at the classroom level and why starting out a school year at 29 students is simply not acceptable. In our particular section, the teacher has now been absent from the classroom for over 4 weeks. Further, we do not have an assigned official enrollment aide and have had multiple substitutes trying to plug the hole. That's changed as of recently, I believe, as of today or as of last week. We now have the enrollment assistant, but again, we've all sort of agreed that that isn't a gap or doesn't fill the gap in having full-time educators teaching these students when we've got 29 students in the classroom. Add in multitude of specialists like math, reading, physical speech, and occupational teachers, along with the OASIS students and teachers who come and go from the classroom, and you can imagine the disruption along with the 29 students who are there on a daily basis. By my count, we have had more than 10 teachers, 11 as of my discussion with the principal today, in and out of the classroom since the beginning of the year. Add in a new math program that is unfamiliar to faculty, students, and parents, and you have a recipe for disaster. While I understand the unforeseen circumstances like this are a regular course in the course of a school year, I'm referring to the illness of the teacher, I hope you too can understand why it is simply unacceptable to start out the year with 29 students in a classroom. At best, you're setting these kids up to underachieve, and at worst, many of them may fail. At such a critical time of development, both mentally and physically, we cannot risk to lose these students. I also wanted to share some stories of families I've gotten to know through both school and athletics here in the district. We've got one family that's already left, a girl that actually I coached TCSA soccer here. They've already left the district to go to a private school. That's confirmed. They're gone. They own a business here. They're an integral member of the community. They've chosen to put their kid into another school. We don't want to lose those kind of families. Those are the kind of families we want coming to board meetings like this and participating in the dialogue, contributing to the school district and to the community at large. There are several folks that I've talked to here that have already spoken or that may yet speak that are in a similar position. And I'd be lying to you if I didn't consider that as an option as well, looking at moving either out of district to another district or leveraging the private school system, something I never would have thought I would have even considered here in District 303. Lastly, I want to share some impacts of my daughter specifically. Similar to some of the other folks that have spoken, she's talking about not being challenged. And when she asks, because I encourage her to challenge the status quo, I tell her to ask the teacher for more challenging work. And she's told, I'd rather keep you with the rest of the class, which I can understand. The teacher has to manage 29 students to try and section off the two or three that are succeeding is a difficult task. And then the last one is, while not as serious as Joe's child's health issues, my daughter was back behind, they had some carpet time, telling stories, speaking, what have you. All the kids moved back as a group. We've all been in a crowd like that. And she banged her head on a chair or a table like this. Nothing major, nothing happened. But it's a risk, right? It's a risk when we have that many children in the classroom, particularly I know at Wasco, who have much smaller classrooms. It's a risk. There's a liability risk there as well that you as a board should be considering. So there's a couple of specific asks, and I'll be wrapping up, that I wanted to make of you all. One is to reduce the cap and send to a much lower number in line with the teacher's contract and the guidance that we've received, as well as most of the general publication and research studies have shown to provide a much better education for our students. Number two, we want to eliminate or drastically rework the school choice policy, which I think is an additive to the pressures of the enrollment here across the district, specifically some of the legacy that you allow to happen, people to come in and their grandfathers.
So I really need to ask you to please.
And then the last one is to make this a regular agenda item. We need transparency. It's one of the challenges I spoke with Mr. Jarrett, the principal at Belgram, one of the challenges I've had. Both with the administration as well as at the local school level, we just need more transparency. And so I'd like to ask you all to make this a regular agenda item. You can see the concern in the public. So let's have this an open dialogue so we can identify, address, and move past this problem onto better things. All right? Thank you so much for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you. That completes our citizen. Oh, I lost my. That completes our citizen comments for today. The next item on the. Pardon? I know, but you weren't here on time, and we've had a half hour of conversation already. Would you please go ahead? Go ahead. Board members? Okay. You have exactly 3 minutes.
I do. I understand that.
All right. Please, you've got 3 minutes.
I'm here to talk about safety.
Mm-hmm.
My name is Kate Bell. I'm here to request the board's help in getting some safety measures taken at St. Charles East. I'm the parent of an East student who was a victim of a violent and deviant bullying incident that took place last spring. Following the incident, which resulted in disciplinary action for the other students involved, and in conjunction with the school administration, three safety measures were identified and agreed upon in order to reduce the likelihood of similar incident happening to anyone else. Those safety measures were multiple cameras to be installed in the interior of the field house, additional staffing to provide for increased supervision of extracurricular activities in the field house, as well as the development and implementation of an educational program aimed at students and staff alike for prevention of similar future incidents. The safety measures were to be in place no later than the beginning of this school year. It has been nearly 7 months since the incident. No cameras have been installed. It is unclear whether additional staffing for increased supervision has actually occurred. And with respect to the educational program, it was my understanding I would have been given the opportunity to discuss the program before implementation and afforded me the opportunity to attend one or more of the facilitated discussions with the students to see if effectiveness of the program and if there was an impact on the students. This has yet to occur. We were informed that an individual had been retained to lead two discussions with students after the discussions took place, and we had not received any other updated information. I had a brief conversation with the individual that spoke to the students, but was told any detailed information regarding topics, outline, or discussion objectives would need to come from the Student Services Department at East. We requested to be contacted by that staff member, yet that has yet to happen. Thus far, we have been unable to obtain any confirmation of verifiable or verifiable status information on any of these items from appropriate administration officials. Different administration officials have in fact provided contradictory information about some of these times, and independent efforts on our part to verify that has not been successful. We have tried to do this on our own with the administration at the school as well as with the superintendent's office and have not been able to resolve these vast discrepancies, nor have the agreed upon results occurred after waiting for nearly 7 months. We've been incredibly patient up to this point and now feel that due to the total lack of progress to date and conflicting explanations we've been given, we needed to take the next step in the D303 chain of command, and here I am this evening. At this time, I am wrapping up and requesting a closed session meeting with the board so that my husband and I can speak freely in that setting due to this situation now involving personnel issues that cannot be disclosed at this setting. Our main goal is the safety of the students and always has been, and we are trying to put in preventative measures to take place so this ensures this sort of violent incident never happens to another student. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Practice of the board not to answer questions right away, but administration will be getting back to those who spoke as per our new system. Also, that said, we will move on to the superintendent's report. Dr. Pearson.
Yes, good evening. Tonight we actually have the opportunity to recognize a couple of our students for their achievements in our district, and we've invited Ms. Christensen, principal at North High School, to come and introduce those students to us. So Ms. Christensen, we'll give you the floor at this time.
Very proud to be here this evening to recognize two outstanding students at St. Charles North. I'm going to invite them up here and I'll explain a little bit more about why they're here. We have Jacqueline O and Cole Hickerson. Come on up, friends. As they're walking up, these are two students from St. Charles North High School who have been recognized as National Merit semifinalists. So over a million and one students, juniors last year, took the PSAT and MSQT. National Merit Scholarship Qualifying Test. You know all of those letters. And in doing so, the National Merit Organization recognized 16,000 students in the nation. Less than 1% of all of the students that took the assessment. And we have two of those friends with us today. They are now having the opportunity to do some paperwork and application processes that will allow them to be eligible for 7,500 different scholarships through the National Merit Program. Without further ado, I'd like to introduce you to Jacqueline and Cole.
You have to speak.
I know.
I'm sorry.
This is my mom, Mrs. Hickerson.
And there's my dad,
Mr. Hickerson.
Hi, I'm Jacqueline. My mom, Mrs. Ellen O, is over there.
What are some things that you're involved in?
we're both involved with the math team. We're both captains, actually, of the math team at our school.
I'm also the student body president at North and one of the co-presidents of the Model United Nations Club.
There we go.
Yep.
After high school, I'd like to go to college. I don't know which one for sure yet, but we're getting there. I'm applying.
And you, what do you think you'll study?
Economics and maybe political science as well.
Mm-hmm. I also plan to go to college. I don't know. I'm applying to around 12 schools, so we'll see where I get in. I plan to study computer science and hopefully work in the machine learning field.
Thank you. Ms. Huell, would you like to present your certificate? We actually have some certificates from the board, and Mrs. Huell will make this presentation.
I know, and this is new, but this is well-deserved, and we're happy to be able to do this. This is a certificate acknowledging that Jacqueline O. and Cole Dickerson, have been recognized for outstanding achievement as a National Merit Semifinalist, probably the first of, maybe not the first, but one of many accolades that you're sure to receive in the future. And we're very proud of you, and we're very proud of your parents for what they did to help you get here. And congratulations.
Thank you. Just two more issues that I wanted to highlight. First of all, I'd like to thank the parents that came tonight and spoke to the board concerning class size. I appreciate you continuing to highlight an issue that we continue to have as a district as a result of declining enrollment in our school system. This is a conversation that we've been engaged in over the past couple of years as we look at our facilities and our staffing across the district. We are working on a comprehensive plan to address those concerns, and that will be discussed in a meeting with the Board of Education with in the next couple of months, looking forward to next school year. And so that will be a public meeting that you will be able to attend. You'll be able to hear some of the information that we plan to provide. But we need to make sure that we're putting together a plan that's comprehensive to address and respond to the declining enrollment and address some of the inefficiencies that we continue to have across the district. So thank you for continuing to engage with us in the conversation. And I look forward to having you come to our meeting in the future. I also just wanted to highlight, Mrs. Huell mentioned the tragic events of last week with one of our students at one of our schools, and that we continue to have tremendous community resources and support for families and students that need those when they're facing a tragic situation, and those resources have been made available to families from the principal. We also have information here in the district office, and we encourage families to reach out if they're needing support or help from any of those mental health agencies in our community. So, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Pearson. Mm-hmm. Next on the agenda today is a 4A action item. May I have a motion? Oh, committee reports. Oh, I needed to pull my thing down. Sorry. You're right. Definitely we had committee reports. And I will start with learning and teaching.
Of course you will.
It's first in our hearts.
Okay, well, we met on the 18th of September, and it was a pretty full meeting. Started with the early childhood program. Couple of recognition. Mrs. Jen Rasu, the Associate Director for Early Childhood. We received the Award of Excellence, and StarNet, which is an organization providing assistance to families with special ed needs. Families with special ed needs want to videotape our classrooms as an exemplar for other districts. So that's quite a thing there, quite an accomplishment. Dr. Melissa Byrne, the Associate Director of Curriculum, announced that Susanna Mendoza, the state controller, joined our culinary practice and entrepreneurship classes at Cook for them as an encouragement to continue on with their culinary practices and entrepreneurship. Start of our agenda, Jason Pearson, I shared the vision statement.
I don't think your mic is on.
I'm sorry, and I'm a little quieter tonight, too. Jason Pearson started with the vision statement, The three pillars of the vision statement are to attain excellence, learn with passion, and live with integrity in a changing world. To that end, he was looking at innovative learning, which includes assessment, digital learning, college and career readiness, and alignment with other benchmark districts, quality staff, the PARA implementation, which is the new assessment for teachers, embedded professional learning and partnerships with the professional associations within the district, and responsible stewardship, facilities and enrollment, class sizes, district budget, and obviously that's timely, district budget, and outreach and community engagement. Next up was supporting all students in D303, Dr. Patty Pelagi, Mrs. Aubrey Shute, Mrs. Karen Maladra, and Mrs. Kelly Galt guided us through the what they called the alphabet soup, and it truly is, of the interventions. I'm not going to tell you what all these mean because even being in education, I'll get a word wrong. PLC, RTI, MTSS, CSE, FAPE, LRE, SEL. I'm in the field, and I get lost with those. But the programs include the Northeast Academy for at-risk 9th through 12th grades, Night School for 11th and 12th grade, OASIS for emotional and behavioral interventions, RISE, which is for practical life skill needs, usually cognitive, STRIVE for academically challenged students who need explicit small steps learning, and our autism program at all levels. I also spoke on the federal laws, IDIEA, more alphabet, ADA, Section 504, as well as state laws and school codes. Talked about the case study evaluation process, outlined what we kind of do for that, identification of needs, then evaluation, goals development, and then determination of services needed. And then discussed the community-based transition programs for 18 to 22-year-olds, the BRIDGES, which is an acronym for Building Relationships, Interdependence, and Developing Globally Empowering Skills, and connections for post-high school supports. And finally, they pointed out that the continuum of services extends from the 80% in regular ed to the 20% in special ed. So that was, I tried to make that as succinct as I could. We will be meeting next Monday at 5 o'clock, which is a slight alteration. The K through 5 math supports and accelerated middle school math pathways will be one item, accelerated college for full day dual credit, dual credit high school English and high school social studies courses descriptions will be the four agenda items that we have right now.
5 o'clock Monday.
5 o'clock, which 5:30 is our typical time now, but because this is such a full meeting, 5 o'clock. So get there early for good seating.
For good seats, yes. Thank you. Yeah, and telling us it's a long meeting, that really is going to bring them in, I'm sure.
But it'll be fun.
It'll be a great meeting. It's our business. Thank you very much. The next item up, committee up, would be business services.
Thank you. We met on September 21st. And as usual, we lead off with our financial reports for Mid-Valley as well as D303. We also heard the near final for June 30th, 2017 finance report, and the auditors were in, I believe, a couple weeks before that. So they'll be bringing their presentation to us, to business services, as they do in the fall here. Next item, Dr. Chapman gave us a kind of a update on the state funding, particularly for Senate Bill 1947, and we had some discussion on what that might mean for our district in the future and further down the road, the next 2 to 3 years. And there was some discussion, since not all the board members were able to attend, of having another meeting pertaining to that and how it will impact future budgets for us. So that'll be kind of on the radar and be available for the public to attend as well. Our next two items are on for consent tonight, which are our annual testing for the COGAT and the PSAT. Then item G was our North High School chair purchase for some computer chairs, some armless computer chairs, which are within North's site budget. Item H on for consent tonight is the purchase of a facilities vehicle from the state contract for an aging truck, as we kind of do follow our yearly process. Then our next item was a discussion of the 2017 tax levy and how they impact our 2018 taxes, and that's kind of that was our kickoff, if you will, on how we determine the tax levy, and we'll be discussing that again in our October meeting. Our next item was the Norris Rec Center restoration update, which is continuing to make progress, and they're opening the center in phases as certain areas get cleaned and are signed off by the state fire marshal. And once again, the park districts continue to do a phenomenal job of keeping the members informed as well.
October 18th, that's next Wednesday, is the first phase of the open meeting.
We already had our first phase, which was the tennis.
Second phase.
Yes.
Second.
Yeah, tennis is open, yeah. Yeah.
Mr. McNally, it'll be the 26th will be the next.
But they're continuing to make some good progress in the pool area as well. Then our next item was the construction update, which are the Norris Rec Center, which is continuing to stay on schedule. And that'll be finishing up at the end of October, which is exciting. And then Thompson, which is continuing to make good progress. And then our last item, which will be on for consent tonight, is the approval of the natural gas generator service agreement for three of our sites, the just kind of an annual maintenance program that we have, and that's on for consent. That's it. All right, and we meet October 26th. And we'll talk about health insurance update, and then tax levy, and then construction update.
I do have a question. I would like to know about the special meeting or a meeting to discuss the levy. Can we talk about that new business today and then decide what the board wants to do?
The levy or the...
The special meeting that you mentioned.
For the Senate bill?
The overall.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Sure. We'll talk about a new business and see what we're going to come up with.
Thank you, I suppose.
Next meeting that was held was community relations. The first.
Okay, so this was our maiden voyage, so everyone bear with me. So Mrs. Fairgreave and I held our first meeting together for the community relations on September 13th. With Mrs. Smith, and so it was very exciting. I'm going to read my minutes for the first time. So bear with me. So we did a new thing, a monthly recognition where a student is highlighted who is changing the community landscape with their service or project. And we recognized Micah Wilson, who was an eighth grade student at Thompson Middle School. He made great achievements to help support foster children, and he did a packaging of different journey bags that he put in for children with them when they moved to new homes. And he partnered with BMO Harris Foundation, and he helped deliver them to CASA of Kane County and some other agencies in Aurora and Chicago, and we wanted to highlight that for him, and he's focusing on a new project, and we're encouraging that with him for running shoes, and hopefully we'll highlight him again. So that was exciting, and so every month we're going to try to highlight a student in the district for that. Also, we have student liaisons again this year. So Anna Miller from St. Charles North and Samantha Stippich from St. Charles East are this year's student liaisons. They're both siblings of the previous liaisons. And we should have them every month doing a report for us. And next month they'll be talking about the kickathon and some other things that they'll be working on. They were not at this month's meeting. The other thing we spoke about was our communication system, and if I'm missing something, Mrs. Fairgreave, please feel free to jump in, but was our communication for email response from the board. So currently, right now, we are sending out a automated response when you email, anyone in the public emails us. Sorry, I'm back and forth with glasses tonight, just bear with me. The message that goes out is, thank you for contacting the St. Charles Community Unit District 303 School Board. Your message is important to us. It is our practice to provide constituents with timely and accurate information in response to questions or concerns. A member of our district administration team will be in touch soon, district administration, on behalf of the school board. We're going to tweak that a little bit just to have a little more of a personable response, and we're still working on that. But the email is sent to the responder advising the receipt of the email, and it's responded to by the administration on behalf of the board. It's assigned to an administrator. Someone responds either by email or phone call, and it's copied to the board. If it's by phone call, we're getting a synopsis of what the discussion was about. If it's by email, we're getting a carbon after the fact. We talked about the wording, sorry. And then the current process is also reflected for citizen comments. So those who spoke today, we're capturing your information, and then it's going to go through the similar process with our administration group. So someone will be in touch via email or phone call and follow up with you about your concerns. And then the board is going to be advised kind of on how that went and what the procedure is going to be after the fact, and make sure that we're all in the loop on that communication. Do you have anything else you want to add? Okay. So that's additionally determining if the administration has addressed the concern or comment previously. Then a process was created for deciding if the topic should be added to new business of a regular school board meeting for further discussion. It's kind of the last point on that. The other thing we discussed was a school board social media response. So social media, as we all know, is a very big issue out there right now. So we kind of highlighted some discussion points. So it's being monitored by administration. Conversations that occur on social media may not be accurate, and this is how administration is addressing these conversations. Currently on school district and school social media sites, we're sharing positive events, celebrations, and successes. Mrs. Smith will only respond if a comment reflects an inaccurate information on a D303 site. Social media is not going to be a venue for us for professional discussion of district policy or procedure on any other site. If there is discussion on an outside social media site that requires attention, the administration, again, will private message or invite conversation privately to the one of the administration office. And if it, again, creates a discussion that the board needs to be aware of, they'll get in touch with us. Utilizing social media and parent link to promote great awareness of school board and committee meetings and availability of minutes in board book. You may have seen this for L&T. So currently, right now, one of our committees is sending out notices of when the meetings are and the minutes, and this is something we're hoping to roll out for all of our committees right now. So right now we have, right, just L&T is the only one utilizing it. Mrs. Galt?
We are.
Yeah. But we're talking about rolling it out for the other committees. So the minutes have gone out as to what goes on in that committee, as well as the upcoming committee meetings. And so it's another venue for us to increase awareness to the community on when our meetings are and what's comprised of the meetings are comprised of. And then we're in our meetings, we're going to be reviewing some Facebook analytics to determine how many people are being reached kind of by that post, and discussing that in community relations. So we are opening some new doors in community relations. Sorry, it's kind of long, because we are kind of creating some new things in community relations and making it more communicative to the community. So we have discussed that in our every other month meeting, which is going to morph into, we're going to bring in a community partner to discuss how we collaborate with our community partners in our District 303 community, and that will be kind of remain to be seen. But for instance, how we work with the library or how we work with the city and how they collaborate with the school in programs. So stay tuned for that, and stay tuned for our community outreach. And what else? Oh, our next meeting is tomorrow. Sorry. Thank you. At 6 p.m. here in this room. That was really long. Sorry.
I hope you didn't forget that last part. Thank you.
Thank you.
Did anyone else have any meetings that they attended or anything like that? None heard. And the one thing that...
Oh, sorry. One really quick note.
Yeah.
Sorry. So our minutes were amended, and so they're not going to be approved tonight. So it'll be another month before they're approved. So just so you know, in case you're looking for them.
And I did go to the DPTO meeting, and they talked about They had their first meeting where they discussed, they introduced themselves, talked about what they're doing, kind of a little bit of an organizational meeting. Their facilitator is Andy Romano, and she's been doing that for a couple of years, so it's a very effective group. Ms. Weibel joined me at that meeting. They basically had a little bit of a financial tutorial as far as dues, gifts to schools, earmarking money and not being able to earmark money, getting permission, and then their treasurer's reports. So that's essentially what they did, and then Dr. Pearson came in and spoke with them, as Dr. Schloman always used to do. And that, I think, is the last meeting to cover today. So now we will get on to the four action items. And so may I have a motion to approve the change orders for Thompson Middle School construction? Mr. Gaffney?
Second.
And Mr. Mannheim? Thank you. So this is on because it has come up since the business services meeting, so there will be a small discussion of it first. And I see Mark Hayes has jumped up to do that for us. Mark Hayes is one of our architects.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Board members and Dr. Pearson, Mark Hayes with ATS and our architects. So, yes, I'm here to give you a little bit of an update on the Thompson Middle School construction project, but really specific to this change order, upcoming change order. And so, as you're aware, there's a lot of construction going on at the middle school project. You see a lot of site work happening, but they're also starting to do a lot of demolition that you really can't see inside most of the 1925 building. And so once they started doing some of the demolition, specifically up on the second floor it started, again, this is primarily in a 1925 building, they noticed some deterioration on some steel lintels at the openings on the second floor. Now, lintels it's the piece of metal, it's a steel angle that supports the face brick above windows. And so they contacted us, they said, you know, we see some deterioration, we had our structural engineer come out. They had to do, it's kind of dark, hard to see a little bit, but they had to do some removal of some of the existing face bricks so that our engineers could take a closer look at the condition of the lintels, how the lintels were constructed. And our structural engineer recommended that the steel angles, the lintels, need to be replaced. As part of that replacement, you have to replace a certain amount of the face brick above the lintel, and depending on the extent of deterioration, you might even need to replace the face brick up to the top of the exterior wall. And that's what we call the parapet. So it talks about parapet and lintels. So there's a certain amount of face brick that has to be replaced as well as steel lintels. So we received, I've got a couple more pictures, I guess. This one is just in the south elevation, similar condition on the north elevation. Again, hard to see, but they started to take out some of the brick to see what was going on there. And then similarly, this is the south elevation of the new cafeteria, which is where the old auditorium used to be. And you can see there's actually brick below that lintel, and that's a spot where years ago they took out windows and they infilled with face brick, but we still have the lintel up above that's deteriorating. And another picture on the west elevation. And it's just another picture on the west elevation. That, again, that arrow is kind of showing potentially the extent of face brick that might need to be removed. So we did receive a price from the masonry contractor, and so their total price was $420,935. Now, I'm going to say that's a worst-case scenario, a not-to-exceed price. Talking to Mr. Lamp just today, the mason is out there. They're doing tuck pointing right now on the 1925 building. And as they're doing tuck pointing, they're assessing, the condition of some of the brick. And they've already determined that, we do not believe we have to replace as much brick as in the original $420,000. We're also taking a closer look at some of the first floor lintels to see, do we need to replace those as well? So I believe this is a maximum number. I believe the number would certainly be reduced. But we're seeking your approval tonight to kind of approve this change order on a not-to-exceed dollar amount of $420,000. And then as we learn more specifics about exactly what needs to happen, we'd be coming back to business services to update the group as to, where we're at with this replacement. As I said, this allows the contractor to keep moving. They're out there. They're doing tuck pointing right now on the 25 building, now is the time to be replacing lintels and face brick.
Mm-hmm. Not surprising for a 90-year-old building. Is that a valid statement?
Yeah. That is. Mm-hmm. And honestly, we didn't have real detailed drawings of even how the lintels were put together. Uh-huh. So we're learning things as they start to tear open walls and mm-hmm. et cetera. Yes.
So I guess my question will be, how, as a board, will we be voting on, or does it have to be bid out, this work?
Oh, the one thing I didn't mention is we did receive, when we bid this project, we received unit pricing on masonry restoration and tuck pointing. And so we have, the contractor submitted a cost per square foot to replace the face brick. So we know that dollar amount. So we just have to quantify the square footage of the face brick. So it's not something that gets bid, but it's something that we'll be getting pricing from the contractor, review it, make sure it complies with the unit pricing, you know, look at the lintel costs, and then bring that forward.
So you will
have a different contractor
Right. I would think that. I was just wondering how we'll continue to get the best price on this, and that will be
unit pricing and us reviewing the pricing as it gets submitted, scrutinizing. You know, we ask for breakdowns of material and labor and square footage so we can, you know, make sure we're getting fair pricing on all change orders.
Okay. Does anybody else have anything? No? Very good. Ms. Retch, will you take the roll call vote, please?
Mr. Gaffney?
Yes.
Mrs. Linkenberg?
Yes.
Mr. Manheim?
Yes.
Mr. McNally?
Yes.
Ms. Weibel?
Yes.
Mrs. Fairgreave?
Yes.
Mrs. Yule?
Yes, the motion carries unanimously. The next item on the... Thank you very much for coming in and explaining it. The next item is the consent agenda. And so I would like to ask if we have an item to be removed today.
We do. If we could pull A4, which is the community relations meeting notes,
mm-hmm.
until next meeting, please.
So we're going to pull them, and you're going to ask that they're tabled.
Tabled, yes.
Yes. Well, technical. Yeah. Thank you. Is there anything else? Anyone else have anything they'd like to have pulled from this consent? No one says it has anything. Mm-hmm. So may I have a motion to approve the consent agenda?
So moved.
Ms. Linkenberg and Mr. McNally, would you take the roll call vote, please?
Mm-hmm. Mrs. Linkenberg?
Yes.
Mr. Manheim?
Yes.
Mr. McNally?
Yes.
Ms. Weibel?
Yes.
Mrs. Fairgreen?
Yes.
Mr. Gaffney?
Yes.
Mrs. Yule?
Yes, the motion carries unanimously. And that is it for our votes, but also on the agenda or in the board book, we have under for information, we have the Freedom of Information requests, the CUSD 303 near final, financial report for August, Mid Valley's report for August, financial report for August 2017, and I believe probably something that has to be reported every year in board book, the annual administrator and teacher salary benefits. It has to be in board. Okay. So that is for information. And now we have new business, and I'd like to start with the request or the thought that we have a meeting to discuss the levy and maybe other financial matters. So I'm really interested in what you think needs to be done.
Well, I felt that it might be advantageous or educational for everybody to sit down and have Dr. Chapman explain to us exactly what the process is and as we're going forward with some of the state funding and budgetary problems that we all have an understanding of what he's going through and what the public will go through and what we'll have to address as we go forward. And having a couple new members on the board, I felt that maybe an hour and a half spent with Dr. Chapman and the superintendent again addressing the issue. And so everybody's basically on the same page and understands exactly what we're going to face here as we go forward would be probably an education for all of us. And again, it would be an open discussion, so the public would be, as far as I'm concerned, welcome to come to the meeting. That's what I felt would be, again, advantageous to what we were doing. So.
Mm-hmm. And I unfortunately was not able to be at that meeting myself, so I've been thinking I need to sit down with Mr. Chapman, but this would be a good way for me to do it. I wonder, other board members, would you like to... The whole levy process thing is something that you can go through it for 5 years in a row and still go, what is that? So it's not bad to just hear it early and often. But would other board members like to have an additional meeting? Whether you necessarily plan to attend or not, but yeah.
Who wants to have an additional meeting, but sure.
Yeah. Well, and then the thought, then I guess, since we do want to have, and it's more than the levy, it's the state budget going forward. Yeah, that and what the state may or may not do on other fronts, the pension, things like that. That's one I always hold in the back of my mind.
Again, we talk about these state laws or budgets or whatever, and again, we talk about scenario items or numbers,
and I think we sit up here and we say SB certain. I don't even think the public understands what we're even talking about, if we understand what we're talking about. So I think some clarification on some of this stuff would be, again, as I say, advantageous to all of us, including the public. So
I think particularly for the project, but I will admit that it would be good for me also, because the state just voted, they rolled it out, they all celebrated, and really nobody knew the details. And so maybe now a month later, whatever, we'll know more. So I will ask, would you like to do something that piggybacks onto the back of a previous meeting?
I would be fine with that. I just know, though, that next Monday we are so full.
So full.
Probably, unless we want to be here.
You are just selling your meeting to every... Yeah. Yes?
The business services seems to have a light agenda coming forward.
Okay.
If we were to keep the meeting at 5 o'clock, we might be able to, that way, staff is here for the meeting, piggyback.
Uh-huh.
It's gotten bigger the last meeting.
Well, you know, we would start, I don't think we'd start up, yeah. Yeah, I'm sorry, I don't think we would start a public meeting till after 6:30 anyway, if you wanted members of the public to come if they'd like to go.
Uh-huh. So backing up, it's going to be a meeting that we can't start till after 6:30 or 7 o'clock at night. And if we're talking hours, I then it needs to be a standalone meeting.
Mm-hmm. But even if we did a standalone meeting, we really wouldn't start till 6:30.
We wouldn't be here starting at 5 to do the business services meeting or another meeting previous to that.
Mm-hmm.
So your choice. You put it where you all want.
Mm-hmm.
It would be your thing.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's also a meeting that the business services, the current one, I look at this. Right. Well, I always hate to hash out schedules publicly with people's information, so I think
just set it.
Oh, I was going to ask Mrs. Ratchford to go through the rotation, but I think after the business services sounds like a fine day to do it. See, I won't be there. October 26th? Thursday?
Yes.
I imagine if staff is here already, they'll be able to do that. Other board members, does it seem okay to you? I think it's okay. I know. Well, let's have a tentative but likely date. Okay. So that's what we're thinking of. Stay tuned. The date could change based on needs, but October 26th, potentially right after business services. So come for business services and then enjoy the rest of the evening with the special board meeting, which will be presentations. So I guess it's more work, but it's good, because you're right. Board members don't know, and really the guts of it, and for sure the citizenry don't really either. So... That said, I think, let me just catch to my page. I think that was it. That was the new business. Does anybody have anything else that they'd like to put out for the new business?
Nothing. you said in your comments tonight, Dr. Pearson, that we would be having within the next couple of months kind of an overview moving forward to deal with some issues regarding populations within the schools and the county. Mm-hmm. And are we looking at doing this next month and after?
When would you think your best guess would be when that type of a meeting would be held?
So our hope is to do it before the holidays because it would impact planning for next school year. So
good, very cool. Okay.
Okay. Good. Is that it, everyone? Okay. There are no closed session. No reason to go to executive session. So may I have an adjournment? May I have a motion to adjourn the meeting? So Mr. McNally.
Second.
And a second is Mrs. Linkenberg. Would you take the roll, please?
Mr. Manheim.
Yes.
Mr. McNally.
Yes.
Ms. Weibel.
Yes.
Mrs. Fairgreave.
Yes.
Mr. Gaffney.
Yes.
Mrs. Linkenberg.
Yes.
Mrs. Yule.
Yes, the motion carries. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much for coming.